For Connecticut Public Radio, I'm John Henry Smith. The return to college campuses this year is fraught with angst like never before, thanks to the pandemic. For a look at how things are going, I welcome the president of Connecticut State Colleges and Universities, Mark Ojakian, to the program. And this is a man who will be retiring soon. Your feelings, sir, on stepping down at this time?
I am looking forward to stepping down after 41 years in Connecticut public service, especially proud of the last 5 years serving as president of the CSCU system. So I'm not going to be retiring 100%. I will continue to work in some capacity in the future. But in terms of the, you know, I like to say the 9-to-5 full-time position, I am leaving that for other opportunities in the future.
Have you thought about your legacy much? And when I ask that, I wonder if the new consolidated system that I think has a name now, the Connecticut State Community College, that the 12 community colleges will eventually turn into once this becomes official. Do you feel like that's going to be your legacy? And how's that process going?
Well, first of all, I think the process is going very well. We recently had a visit with our accrediting body, albeit virtual, and they noted that we have made significant progress in the past year and did really see a bright future for Connecticut State Community College. I thought it was important before my departure to have all of the systems in place to move forward towards accreditation, and of course that meant naming the institution, naming the senior leadership team of the institution. So I'm very hopeful that within the timeline we had articulated, which will be the fall of 2023, we will be up and running as a new institution and have that accredited. I believe that that'll may perhaps be one piece of a legacy at the CSCU system. But I also think one of the biggest areas I've tried to focus on has been student success. How do we not only envision what students need to be able to be successful into the future, but removing the obstacles that impede them from attaining that success, and then providing them with services that allow them to complete, whether it's with a certificate or an associate's or a bachelor's or a master's degree. And I'm also particularly proud of the work that we've done collectively around workforce. We've expanded the number of advanced manufacturing centers in Connecticut under my leadership to now fully functioning 8 centers in Connecticut. We serve as an integral part of the governor's workforce council. And so I think there's a lot of things we've been able to accomplish as a team together over the last 5 years.
Getting back to the new consolidated college system, how will people notice the difference? Will the campuses that we all have gotten to know, will they, any of them, be closing? Will jobs be lost? Will prices change? How will we notice the difference?
Well, I want to make a couple points in that regard. The reason, one of the reasons we moved forward with this initiative under Students First was to make sure that every campus would remain open. We have 12 community colleges in the state the size of Connecticut. I felt there was no need to replicate all of the services in terms of administration across all 12, that we could do better with a regional approach to providing services. It fit in better with our workforce investment boards, and I thought that was a better approach. So you will see all of the campuses that are currently in existence continue to operate. There will be jobs at the higher level of administration that will no longer be needed. Those might be provided on a regional basis, or positions may be combined on a particular campus. We are envisioning taking the savings that will come from this and putting it back onto the campuses in terms of student services, financial aid, counseling, tutoring centers, career centers, those services that students have to interact with in order to be able to complete and to find gainful employment into the future. So for the student, Things will be seamless. You will be able to take, as an example, a course anywhere within the 12 campus locations, either in person or virtually, and not have to reapply again and not have to worry if your credits will be accepted or not from one community college to the next. So it's meant to provide better access and opportunity for students. It's meant to increase our student success rates at our community colleges, especially for students of color who lag far behind, and it's meant to close the equity gap that currently exists between our white and non-white students, and then ultimately to provide our community colleges with a financially viable future. You know, as you may know, we have, like any other function of government, received funding reductions over the past, 5 to 7 years. And I don't believe those are going to be reversed in the future. So we need to do our part to sort of scale back how we provide services to students and meet the needs of the community where those campuses are located.
Did you receive a lot of pushback? Because it seems like it's that the concept of regionalization, and that's kind of in essence what you're talking about, is contrary to the natural instincts, it seems, of many in the state of Connecticut.
I think what I've learned over my many years in the state of Connecticut is that Connecticut truly is a land of steady habits, and that change is hard. And so when you try to push forward an initiative that's as bold as what we've tried to do under Students First, you undoubtedly are going to have folks that are opposed to it. We have not received any sort of plan from any constituent group that would help us shape this proposal. And what I think we've seen is with our regional approach, it is aligned much better with our workforce development boards in the state of Connecticut. We've seen a lot more grant opportunities being focused on regions rather than individual institutions.
How is reopening your campuses to actual live students, how is that going across your institutions?
Well, I mean, so far, so good. We are phasing in our repopulation efforts so we don't have a lot of folks moving in at the same period of time. We have started to repopulate the residence halls.
Okay.
Classes will not start until the 26th. For the community colleges and the four state universities.
Okay.
But because we are phasing in the repopulation of our campuses, we began doing that on the 10th.
Okay.
As you also know, the public health guidance that the governor's public health experts have issued around out-of-state students and out-of-state visitors require quarantining for 14 days if you come from a state that is on the hotspot list. So we've had to take all of that into consideration. We have had a tremendous amount of exemplary work done on all of our campuses. Now, the true test is going to come when campuses are fully operational around the 26th when classes begin. And we are, as I said, cautiously optimistic that we're going to be able to continue throughout the fall semester, and we have all the proper protocols in place to make sure that we test students, that we mitigate the spread, that we contain the spread. But we also had to put in place plans that would call for the immediate shutdown of campuses should that become necessary.
Which we have seen in recent days. There have been shutdowns, most infamously at the University of North Carolina. I believe Notre Dame has a situation they're dealing with as well. I've seen some students in the system quoted as saying that CSCU has reopened for in-person learning too soon. What do you say to that, particularly in light of those high-profile instances of things going wrong that I just referred to?
Well, I would say that I do not think we're opening too soon. The strategy calls for us to open and to complete the semester by Thanksgiving. And I think that's a very responsible timeline. I also believe that students want a combination of in-person and online instruction, want the experience, albeit different this time, of being on a residential campus. So Connecticut, under the governor's leadership, has done an incredible job of keeping citizens safe. As you know, we have one of the lowest positivity rates in the country. And so there is no reason that we cannot open safely. I think we have all of the physical distancing protocols in place. We all have the cleaning protocols in place. We have plenty of PPE. Mask wearing is required on all of our campuses. Our dining halls have been reconfigured to take into account physical distancing requirements. We've done a very proactive social media campaign and email campaign to students and their families about what the protocols are, what the expectations are once they come back to campus in terms of what is allowed in the dorm space, what is allowed off campus. Whether you're on campus or off campus, you have a responsibility to keep you and your campus community safe. And so off-campus parties will be treated the same as on-campus parties in terms of looking at discipline should that occur. So we are doing our best to position ourselves to be successful. A lot is going to depend on whether or not students take this seriously, whether we can convince them that they have a social responsibility not only to keep themselves safe, but to keep their fellow students, faculty, and staff safe, and to keep their community safe, because you may go to Central and live off campus in New Britain, and if you act in a way that's in violation of the governor's executive order, you're actually putting the whole community at risk. So you need to be smart about the way that you interact throughout the entire semester.
Well, you mentioned campus parties. We've heard from students at UConn. And through media, of course, all of us have heard from students and observers across the country at campuses. And it seems like the parties are going on one way or the other when you get young, high, 19-year-olds, 20-somethings together. Has there been any thought to, instead of saying you guys can't party, was there ever a thought process of, okay, they're probably going to do it, here's how we can give them guidelines and maybe equipment and help them do it safely?
Part of the guidance to our students is, if you're going to gather outside, right? And there's a maximum number of folks that can gather in one place outside. If you're going to gather inside, do it in accordance with the numbers that the governor has put out. Wear masks, socially distance yourself. I think what you've seen is where institutions message this properly and where institutions take action properly, like the action that UConn just took, which when there was a party on campus, they immediately revoked the privileges of those folks from living on campus, sends a message that this is serious. This is not just about your ability to have fun and party, but it's about your responsibility to keep folks safe. So we're providing the guidance both in a very sort of a proactive way to talk about what you can do and how you can do things safely. But on the other end, students and their families need to understand that putting others at risk in terms of their health and safety is really not something that any of the institutions are going to look kindly upon.
Well, of course not.
That there will be repercussions.
Yeah, and of course, that we all understand that. And, me personally, I'm not advocating for, kids partying at this time. Obviously, kids should not do that. Nobody should do that at this time. I think my question was more in line with, okay, they shouldn't, but they're kids. And do you think in some way there is a risk of saying, well, okay, we are banning you from doing this and there's going to be repercussions for doing this? The way kids typically think, are they going to say, well, we're going to go way underground, deep underground, passwords at the door, whole nine yards? I mean, and in that case, Have we solved anything?
The governor has given very direct guidance on gatherings. It would be irresponsible of me to say, well, their kids are going to do it anyway, so, you know, sort of, you know, ignore the public health risks that might be available to the greater community or the greater state. I think institutions are trying to promote gatherings in a responsible way, but in accordance with the governor's executive orders, but then recognizing that if students don't comply, then there needs to be some sort of responsibility taken for those actions.
You mentioned all of the preparations you guys have made on campus to, yeah, you know, for with PPE and to make things socially distanced. That costs money, of course. How much has enrollment fallen? Because now I'm talking about the revenue side. That was the cost side. This is the revenue side. How much has enrollment fallen across the system? How many of those students who are coming back are not coming back to live on campus? All of those things have effects on your revenue. What effect is that having on your bottom line?
Back in July, the Board of Regents adopted a finance package. We had adopted that package assuming a 10% reduction in enrollment. I think the numbers that I saw yesterday indicated that we are doing better than that 10% reduction, but as you know, there's still a little bit of time for students not to come to campus. We've seen enrollment declines in terms of retention between first-year and second-year students. We've seen some students desire to live off-campus as opposed to on-campus. So we've seen a variety of, I think, enrollment trends that are not unlike other institutions of higher education, not only in Connecticut, but also nationally. So that is going to have an effect on our bottom line. When we adopted the spending package, assuming the 10% reduction in enrollment, that will necessitate a reserve reduction of $33 million at the end of the year, all things being equal. So we're going to have to use reserves in order to balance the budget going forward. Now, if we have to immediately pivot and close like we had to do last spring, and last spring, as a matter of fact, closing at spring break in March, we had to return $25 million to students and their families in terms of room and board refunds. If that were to happen, we would see a drastic reduction happen to our bottom line to the tune of $100 or $125 million, would have significant impacts moving forward.
Yeah, at that point, would the threat be existential?
I think we would be in dire financial straits if that were to happen. I can't imagine the governor or the legislature not being of help during that particular set of circumstances. These are public institutions of higher education in Connecticut, which have a public mission and serve a public good. So I would imagine that the legislature and the governor would work together to figure out, you know, a way to fund us to a level that would obviate the need to have a conversation about the existence of institutions. But clearly, if we had to, you know, shut down next week, we would be talking about $100, $125 million, which would be significant. Then we would have to work, as I said, with the legislature and the governor's office to, you know, find a way out of that financial hole.
You know, very famously, CSCU has implemented a high flex model for course offerings, in which half the class is in the classroom and the other half is live streaming it from home. What have been the challenges of making this happen so far, both financially, from a staffing perspective?
I think whenever you have a new model, a new modality of instruction during unprecedented times such as a pandemic, you're going to have, challenges. We had to provide technology to all of our institutions. Some had it, some did not. And now everybody has the technology necessary to do that. Training became important for faculty to who were used to for so many years providing their instruction face-to-face, and now they had to adapt to a different modality for providing that instruction. And that came, at a cost. But I think everybody has pivoted to this modality in a very positive way, and I couldn't be more appreciative of the efforts of our faculty in making the shift. They recognize that in order to continue to provide these educational opportunities to students during a pandemic, that things need to look and things need to be provided in a different way. And so they have done that. The other challenge that we are finding is that students sometimes, especially poorer students, students in urban settings that don't have access to internet, that may be taking classes at home, need more assistance in how to adapt to the online modality. And we're providing that as well, to students, whether it's providing students with laptops, whether it's providing students with more hotspots where they can access the internet, or whether it's contracting as a block with all of our internet providers to provide better internet opportunities for our students that we paid for last spring, for example. We're going to continue it in the fall. So there's a lot of challenges, but I believe as a system, we are meeting those challenges. And as I said, I'm very optimistic that all things being equal, we'll be able to begin on time and hopefully have a full semester, which will end at the Thanksgiving break.
Final question. Given what you learned from the sudden shutdown in the spring, given what you've learned from observing how reopening has played out in other places across the country and what you've had the chance to research and study over the summer, what are the one or two biggest lessons learned about the type of reopening that the CSCU is trying to do that you're applying right now?
Well, I think the biggest thing that I've learned is that communication to all parties is the key to any successful operation or reopening. Working with all the constituencies to make sure that everybody has a voice in how we will be returning. Ultimately, presidents and myself need to make those decisions, but we took into account all of the considerations that were brought forward by students, faculty, and staff, and communicating regularly with everybody on your campus. We meet every day as a senior leadership team to go over the challenges that exist. And the other thing that we learned is that, we're not an island unto ourselves, and really collaborating closely with the public health experts in Connecticut under the governor's leadership has been an incredible experience. And because of that collaboration and partnership, I think we positioned ourselves very well to be successful.
Mark Hojakian, president of the Connecticut State Colleges and Universities System, thank you so much, and best of luck. Have a very happy retirement when that day finally comes.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure to be on with you.